Argo, attachment to the enjoyment of sensation, typified by earthly love, and 5. Pataya, all possibility of anger or hatred. The student who has cast off these fetters can no longer be swayed by the influence of his senses either in the direction of love or hatred, and is free from either attachment to or impatience of physical plane conditions. Here again we must guard against a possible misconception, one with which we frequently meet. The purest and noblest human love never dies away, is never in any way diminished by occult training, on the contrary, it is increased and widened until it embraces all with the same fervor which at first was lavished on one or two. But the student does in time rise above all considerations connected with the mere personality of those around him, and so is free from all the injustice and partiality which ordinary love so often brings in its train. Nor should it for a moment be supposed that in gaining this wide affection for all he loses the especial love for his closer friends. The unusually perfect link between Nanda and the Buddha, as between S. John and Jesus, is on record to prove that on the contrary this is enormously intensified, and the tie between the master and his pupils is stronger far than any earthly bond. For the affection which flourishes upon the path of holiness is an affection between egos, and not merely between personalities, therefore it is strong and permanent, without fear of diminution or fluctuation, for it is that perfect love which casteth out fear. 4. Arhat, the venerable, the perfect. On attaining this level the aspirant constantly enjoys the consciousness of the buddhic plane, and is able to use its powers and faculties while still in the physical body, and when he leaves that body in sleep or trance he passes at once into the unutterable glory of the nirvanic plane. In this stage the occultist must cast off the last remains of the 5 remaining fetters, which are, 6. Paga, desire for beauty of form or for physical existence in a form, even including that in the heaven world. 7. Apaga, desire for formless life. 8. Oh, pride. 9. Udaksha, agitation or irritability. 10. Dottavij, ignorance. On this we may remark that the casting off of Apaga involves not only getting rid of desire for earthly life, however grand or noble that life may be, and astral or devachanic life, however glorious, but also of all liability to be unduly influenced or repelled by the external beauty or ugliness of any person or thing. Apaga, desire for life either in the highest and formless planes of the heaven world or in the still more exalted buddhic plane would be merely a higher and less sensual form of selfishness, and must be cast off just as much as the lower. Udaksha really means liability to be disturbed in mind. And a man who had finally cast off this fetter would be absolutely unruffled by anything whatever that might happen to him, perfectly impervious to any kind of attack upon his dignified serenity. The getting rid of ignorance of course implies the acquisition of perfect knowledge, practical omniscience as regards our planetary chain. When all the fetters are finally cast off the advancing ego reaches the 5th stage, the stage of full adeptship, and becomes Vaisaka, the one who has no more to learn. Again as regards our planetary chain, it is quite impossible for us to realize at our present level what this attainment means. All the splendor of the nirvanic plane lies open before the waking eyes of the adept. While when he chooses to leave his body he has the power to enter upon something higher still, a plane which to us is the merest name. As Professor Rhys Davids explains, he is now free from all sin, he sees and values all things in this life and their true value, all evil being rooted from his mind he experiences only righteous desires for himself and tender pity and regard and exalted love for others. To show how little he has lost the sentiment of love, we read in the Metta Sutta of the state of mind of one who stands at this level. As a mother loves, who even at the risk of her own life protects her only son, such love let there be toward all beings. Let goodwill without measure prevail in the whole world, above, below, around, unstinted, unmixed with any feeling of differing or opposing interests. When a man remains steadfastly in this state of mind all the while, whether he be standing or walking, sitting or lying down, then is come to pass the saying which is written, even in this life has holiness been found. Chapter 17. What lies beyond? Beyond this period, it is obvious that we can know nothing of the new qualifications required for the still higher levels which yet lie before the perfect man. It is abundantly clear, however, that when man has become a seeker, he has exhausted all the possibilities of moral development, so that further advancement for him can only mean still wider knowledge and still more wonderful spiritual powers. We are told that when man has thus attained his spiritual majority, whether in the slow course of evolution or by the shorter path of self-development, he assumes the fullest control of his own destinies and makes choice of his future line of evolution among seven possible paths which he sees opening before him. Naturally, at our present level we cannot expect to understand much about these, and the faint outline of some of them, which is all that can be sketched in for us, conveys very little to the mind, except that most of them take the adept altogether away from our earth chain, which no longer affords sufficient scope for his evolution. One path is that of those who, as the technical phrase goes, accept Nirvana, through what incalculable ons they remain in that sublime condition, for what work they are preparing themselves, what will be their future line of evolution, are questions upon which we know nothing, and indeed if information upon such points could be given, it is more than likely that it would prove quite incomprehensible to us at our present stage. But this much at least we may grasp, that the blessed state of Nirvana is not, as some have ignorantly supposed, a condition of blank nothingness, but on the contrary of far more intense and beneficent activity, and that ever as man rises higher in the scale of nature his possibilities become greater, his work for others ever grander and more far-reaching, and that infinite wisdom and infinite power mean for him only infinite capacity for service, because they are directed by infinite love. Another class chooses a spiritual evolution not quite so far removed from humanity, for though not directly connected with the next chain of our system, it extends through two long periods corresponding to its first and second rounds, at the end of which time they also appear to accept Nirvana, but at a higher stage than those previously mentioned. Others join the Diva evolution, whose progress lies along a grand chain consisting of seven chains like ours, each of which to them is as one world. This line of evolution is spoken of as the most gradual and therefore the least arduous of the seven courses, but though it is sometimes referred to in the books as yielding to the temptation to become a god, it is only in comparison with the sublime height of renunciation of the Nirmanakya that it can be spoken of in this half-disparaging manner, for the adept who chooses this course has indeed a glorious career before him. And though the path which he selects is not the shortest, it is nevertheless a very noble one. Yet another group are the Nirmanakyas, those who, declining all these easier methods, choose the shortest but steepest path to the heights which still lie before them. They form what is poetically termed their guardian wall. And, as the voice of the silence tells us, protect the world from further and far greater misery and sorrow. Not indeed by warding off from it external evil influences, but by devoting all their strength to the work of pouring down upon it a flood of spiritual force and assistance, without which it would assuredly be in far more hopeless case than now. Yet again there are those who remain even more directly in association with humanity, and continue to incarnate among it, choosing the path which leads through the four stages of what we have called above the official period. And among these are the masters of wisdom, those from whom we who study theosophy have learnt such fragments as we know of the mighty harmony of evolving nature. But it would seem that only a certain comparatively small number adopt this course, probably only so many as are necessary for the carrying on of this physical side of the work. In hearing of these different possibilities, people sometimes exclaim rashly that there could of course be no thought in a master's mind of choosing any but that course which most helps humanity, a remark which greater knowledge would have prevented them from making. We should never forget that there are other evolutions in the solar system besides our own, and no doubt it is necessary for the carrying out of the vast plan of the Logos that there should be adepts working on all the seven lines to which we have referred. Surely the choice of the master would be to go wherever his work was most needed, to place his services with absolute selflessness at the disposal of the powers in charge of this part of the great scheme of evolution. This then is the path which lies before us, the path which each one of us should be beginning to tread. Stupendous though its heights appear, we should remember that they are attained but gradually and step by step, and that those who now stand near the summit once toiled in the mire of the valleys, even as we are doing. Although this path may at first seem hard and toilsome, yet ever as we rise our footing becomes firmer and our outlook wider, and thus we find ourselves better able to help those who are climbing beside us. Because it is at first thus hard and toilsome to the lower self, it has sometimes been called by the very misleading title of the path of woe. But, as Mrs. Besant has beautifully written, through all such suffering there is a deep and abiding joy, for the suffering is of the lower nature, and the joy of the higher. When the last shred of the personality is gone, all that can thus suffer has passed away, and in the perfected adept there is unruffled peace and everlasting joy. He sees the end toward which all is working, and rejoices in that end, knowing that earth's sorrow is but a passing phase in human evolution. That of which little has been said is the profound content which comes from being on the path, from realizing the goal and the way to it, from knowing that the power to be useful is increasing, and that the lower nature is being gradually extirpated. And little has been said of the rays of joy which fall upon the path from lofty levels, the dazzling glimpses of the glory to be revealed, the serenity which the storms of earth cannot ruffle. To anyone who has entered on the path, all other ways have lost their charm, and its sorrows have a keener bliss than the best joys of the lower world. Van, Volume V, Number 12. Let no man therefore despair because he thinks the task too great for him. What man has done, man can do, and just in proportion as we extend our aid to those whom we can help, so will those who have already attained be able in their turn to help us. So from the lowest to the highest, we who are treading the steps of the path are bound together by one long chain of mutual service, and none need feel neglected or alone, for though sometimes the lower flights of the great staircase may be wreathed in mist, we know that it leads up to happier regions and purer air, where the light is always shining. The end of this book.